The Football Sack.
Hello and welcome to The Football Sack, the Sack on Sunday podcast. My name is Michael Rochek. Across the decks, we've got Pete Novakovsky. How are you going, Pete?
Very, very well. How are you about yourself?
Doing very well. We've got a lot of football to get through, and we've also joined with Anne O'Dong from the Oz Women's Game. How are you doing, Anne?
Very well, Michael. How are you?
Very good. Let's get straight into some A-League results. So far this round, we've had a 1-1 draw with Melbourne Heart and Adelaide United. Adelaide recovering well to earn that draw after going behind against Melbourne Heart at home.
Well, Adelaide have proved in the last few weeks that their side is coming together. They've started to gel more. And the fact that Rennie Coolen's squad is just looking that much better. Dario Vidicic is still working more and more off the ball. Sergio van Dijk is still doing some good stuff. And Cassio's just proven to be a better defender now.
And, of course, it was Spasi Dolevski who scored the equaliser late on in front of a big crowd at Hindmarsh Stadium to earn that point, which Adelaide will be very pleased for, to come out of losing 7-1 to Brisbane and then going 1-0 down to Melbourne Heart, who've been very unlucky again this season, not to have really wrapped up 3 points they've conceded late on in a few games now.
Is that a concentration issue?
May very well be. They've got some issues with Colosimo sort of being want away. He was sent off in that game. He's got 2 yellow cards. And there's, I think, one of the things that happens when you're a new club and you've had 2 seasons is, or at least one and a little bit, with the changes that they've had in their list, you're going to have some teething problems.
Melbourne Heart, their squad is very well developed up front. They've got Makon, Dave Williams, and Alex Terra. We've talked about them previously. We talk about them non-stop. Those three guys, they should be scoring goals every single week, but the fact is, it's just that midfield not getting that ball to them fast enough, I think. Wayne Schroy is doing a lot of work, but he just doesn't have that same support that he had last season.
I don't think it's a sense of more of their unlucky. For me, I think the Melbourne Heart are lacking a bit of spark at the moment, which raises the question, where is that going to come from? Is that going to come from the top with John Van Schipt? And I think he's under a bit of pressure.
Yeah, look, he is. He's made some big signings, and he's also made some big calls removing Colosimo from the captaincy, and we wonder what was the precursor to that decision and whether it's affected their season so far. It's hard to argue that it hasn't. You know, they've lacked the stability. Colosimo said that he wanted to go to the Victory. For a former club captain to say that about his club, yeah, it's not good, and I believe it has disabled them.
And I think you also can't underestimate the loss of Fred. He is that spark that I was speaking about that they're lacking, and at the moment they don't seem that, like they've got the depth of squad to be able to replace that. I think that's going to be something that they're really going to have a look at, and I don't know how they're going to fix that, but they need to get some points pretty quickly. Adelaide, on the other hand, it was a good stabilising performance, but the jury's still out in relation to Adelaide and Rennie Coolen. Pete, you mentioned that, you know, they look like they'd got it together.
But they're coming together slowly. That's the problem.
I'm not too sure. I think it's too slow. And this is Rennie Coolen's second season with Adelaide. You mentioned Van Schipt has put a lot of himself into the Melbourne Heart. I think Coolen needs to do that with Adelaide United as well. He's brought in 1 or 2 players, but I'm still yet to say, yes, this is their defining structure.
Where they win.
This is what Adelaide are about. I'm still not seeing that yet.
Well, the thing with Adelaide is that they started very well this season. We thought, you know, with the list that they've got, they'd get to the finals. Then they got demolished 7-1. And it's hard. You look at Arsenal, they've had other problems too. They had problems with star players leaving, but the mental effect of a 7-1 loss or a big loss where you concede more than 4, you know, it's palpable and it's enduring. And they did well to get a 1-1 draw. And I believe that, you know, they can continue on sort of some trajectory. They'll get to the finals and we'll see what happens after that.
Speaking of trajectory, they're coming back. Central Coast Mariners,
oh, well,
they're getting
they
back
are.
Up there.
Well, they are. And look, they had issues with how to balance the team up top. And it's just simple. Pick Matt Simon and pick Bernie Abini.
Yeah, we said that at the start of the season. Who is he going to play as the centre forward? Graham Arnold being the coach there. We're saying, who's going to be the main focus of attack? Is it going to be Matt Simon, Michael Baird, Bernie Abiniese? Is it going to be another youngster, or what's the go? And Graham Arnold just said, play them both, like he said last week, Michael.
Yep.
And it's proving to work.
Interestingly, though, the problem at Central Coast now is the defence. They keep conceding, like, that 1 or 2 goals a game. If you really want to be the A-League champs, you've got to not concede. In a league where there's a salary cap, you're going to concede some goals a bit more even, but a very good win in Wellington
It's amazing. There was talk about how much Alex Wilkinson really settles down the Central Coast side. I think also one of the key things is if you've got somebody who can lead and is very vocal, and I think they needed that against a very attacking Wellington Phoenix. And yeah. I feel sorry for them because they've played some good stuff they but have. Just not gotten the reward for it. But I think one of the key things is the top six, the front six for Central Coast does look a lot more balanced. There looks like there's more movement off the ball, and with Abeni and Simon both there, it means that they can attack from both flanks, which I think they were a bit one-dimensional in the opening couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah, and you wondered whether, you know, Central, well, they were my pick to win the A-League, but that just the balance at the back hasn't been there either, despite the fact that they're quite settled there. They've got the same guys they had last year, and they should be just as consistent, but for one reason or another, they didn't do so well against Brisbane. They didn't do so well in other games, and to win at Westpac Stadium and to beat Perth Glory as well last week, it's been a good couple of weeks for Central Coast. The Phoenix, though, they just keep getting players sent off, and so they didn't have, you know, stalwarts. They lost Paul Eiffel in the first game to an injury, and that's really affected them for a threadbare squad.
I was going to say, they don't have much of a squad, and they're going to be struggling maybe in the next couple of weeks. And it's funny, you know, they've got a small squad as it is. You're getting players sent off, which is not helping the cause. But the one good thing for them is that Ricky Herbert knows New Zealand football like the back of his hand. So they might be able to find replacements from the local league in that sense.
For sure. And they haven't been insignificant players they lost. Of course, we talk about Eiffel. Tim Brown as well, very, very influential player through the midfield. And Ben Sigmund, who, you know, an all-white, he went to the World Cup, and to lose him last week preventing a goal-scoring opportunity, he was right to be sent off, but it just, for the next week, it wasn't going to be easy to play Central Coast.
And let's also not forget Alex Smith, formerly with Sydney Olympic. We've seen him play a lot of football here in New South Wales. Now he's playing in Wellington and he's performing. He's doing well. He's holding that midfield. But I think that the main player for Wellington at the moment is Tony Warner in goal. He's one of the guys who's making brilliant saves when he has to, but mucks up every so often.
Yeah.
It's probably his defence who just lets him go every so often.
Yeah, against the Victory, they had issues on Fashini's wing. They had Rojas on the second half coming through that side, but they had Lockhead and Danny Sanchez, the Spaniard, and knocking balls across in space. And once or twice, Warner came and didn't get the ball. And that's really a cardinal sin for a lot of goalkeepers.
Yeah, it always was the rule. If you don't collect the ball, collect the player.
And, exactly.
And he's really not that committed. And speaking of Browns, James Brown, congratulations to him, by the way, who was the NAB October Young Footballer of the Year and
deservedly
just
so.
Absolutely well deserved
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, great. And we'll get onto that in a moment with Sydney playing Gold Coast at the SFS today on Sunday. We record on Sunday. And to see James Brown, he's played very well at the SFS. The first time they came out to the SFS, he played a very, very good game. So we expect to see that again now that he's in red-hot form. Newcastle Jets, 2-0 over Perth Glory at Osgrid Stadium.
Here comes the mid-season, well, beginning of the season slump.
It's just a slump, isn't it?
Oh, it usually lasts all season, the slump, unfortunately. That's
well, part
see, of the
problem. We saw the exact same thing happen last season as well. Glory starting very, very strongly, and then they just hit a bit of a speed hump. And now's the problem whereby Ian Ferguson has to try and recover from it. He's got the squad. The players are perfect, and you can see that in their football. Problem is now Ian Ferguson trying to rally those guys to make sure that they can get to that next level.
All right, Pete, fire up the air raid siren because this is what's going to happen. Because I am going to go on a rant. I like Fergie. I've met him a couple of times. He's a really nice guy. Unfortunately, he is not the best coach. Let's be real here. The game plan over the last couple of weeks has been get it to Schmelz. Good game plan, great scorer. Unfortunately, you can't go with that all the time because guess what? Everybody knows what your game plan is. I think the problem is that Fergie is pretty much like Dave Mitchell. He's been there the last couple of seasons. He was there during the Mitchell regime and really he's not changed. And in that sense, I don't know why he's still at Perth Glory to tell you the truth. For me, I think there's a really good coach on the sidelines waiting for his chance and he's one we should grab, Ernie Merrick. That's all.
Well, that was an impromptu rant.
That was one from the heart.
Didn't expect that one.
That one was one from the heart.
We didn't plan it.
As a frustrated Glory supporter who sits there going, we have the players, as you say, Pete. We have some brilliant players now. Unfortunately, we're not using them. And as footballer commentator tweets say, Craig Foster, that is, I don't know what Pat's doing.
Well, why do you have a Rolls-Royce engine with a learner plate driver? And that's the old analogy, and it's never been truer for the Perth Glory in the last 5 years. Just had Muppets in charge. For a club that deserves better, who's have a great past in winning NSLs, and unfortunately it is a bit sad, and they really need somebody there who's got, you know, a bit more about them. Getting to a club that does have someone who behind the wheel who's got a bit about them is Ange Postecoglou at Brisbane Roar. That
Can
took
we
a
have
long
him,
time.
Please?
Well, we actually have a bit of audio from that game so we can find out what was the atmosphere like.
And of course, that was
that's
Ante Kovic just taking down an Albanian dissident.
It's pretty intense. It sounds pretty strong, though.
Look, what a game! I mean, it had everything. In the first sort of 35 minutes, we had 4 goals, 2 red cards, some great goals, some really, really great goals. Archie Thompson, we've seen him in recent weeks, just, you know, at the end of games, just being really down and out. And for someone who's got usually such a buzz in his step, he was really feeling it. And when he scored those goals, he celebrated more than the blue and white brigade behind the goals. It was just a performance that really was something special.
2 quality goals. The first one outside of the boot, lobbing Theoklotos. That was just class. And I thought, no, there's no way he could actually better that, but he did.
He did. He totally did. What happened for both the goals, it was really just the haranguing game of Melbourne Victory. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to allow Brisbane Roar to play. Ferreira got in and took the ball away from, I believe it may have been Partaloo. Someone's going to rip into me on Twitter. You know, and it was that pressing game that allowed
him. Which is a rare occurrence, actually, to get the ball off Partaloo.
Yes.
It's not known to be happening.
Well, the commentary was actually really good in that regard. They said that 7 of the top 10 passes of the ball, completed passes, were in Brisbane Roar's team. And that's what you say about Barcelona.
And
Eric Partaloo, number 1, and by a huge margin too.
Well, and what was really interesting for me, it was a great tactical game for me to watch because you as a Chelsea supporter, you would have watched Chelsea v Queen's Park when they had the same situation. They had 9 men, and I remember saying on Twitter, this is going to be a great test for Mem Drakovic and seeing how he can set up his team. And
he was a defender back in the day as well.
That was a defensive lesson. What if you go back and watch what Melbourne Victory did last night in comparison to what happened with Adelaide United last week? Adelaide United let themselves get pulled out of shape this way, that way. Yeah. They were tracking the runners and therefore leaving space, and the centre backs were trying to cover too much. Melbourne were the most compact unit I've ever seen this season.
Yeah.
And this could be the making of Melbourne Victory.
Yeah. I mean, look, they ingloriously parked the bus, but they did it in a really, really exceptionally well-organised way. They sat 4, and then they sat 4, and then they had a goalkeeper. They had no one beyond that. And it was really just compact. You know, they let them go wide. They let them come back into the centre. They knew the extent of their abilities. There were zones where they weren't going to allow them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really pleasing to see from Melbourne Victory.
What was a little not so pleasing to see, I thought, was the lack of urgency of Brisbane Roar. We know they can pass the ball, and the possession statistics in that game were absolutely ridiculous. Mm. However, I didn't see them actually try and push and try and penetrate and get in behind. There were very, very few times that they were able to get in behind the Melbourne Victory, and Ferran did it a couple of times, but I thought the rest of them, it was more of a case of they were playing like Arsenal. They were trying to walk that ball in, and at times they just had to take shots.
Yeah, well, look, perhaps they were a bit worried that if they got into an advanced position, someone was just going to come in and absolutely clean them up, as happened in the first half. You know, Ante Kovic, rightly last man being sent off, and then the second red card. I want to get each of your opinion on this. First of all, Pete, what were your thoughts?
Well, Mr. Matt Fashini diving straight into Thomas Broich. Now, okay, sure, Thomas Broich is the most fouled player in the A-League, but the fact that Matt Fashini dives straight in, studs up, it's late, so the ball's already moved off, It's got to be a red card. There's no doubt about that.
Anne?
I have a different situation. I thought it was line ball, but my problem is that I think Fashini left himself open. You can't go studs up, you can't go in late, and you can't lift yourself off the ground. And regardless of the amount of contact made, and I've actually just talked myself into it was a straight red. Because I just went through all the elements. It was a straight red.
Yeah, look, what if we had player cam on Matt Fashini in the lead up to that, the ball got past De Bruyne, and from about, I don't know, 10 seconds, he's just sprinting. It seemed like 10 seconds. It was in slow-mo, just going. I'm going to get that ball. No, Broish is faster than me. Oh, God, I'm horizontal. My studs are showing. There's Broish on the ground. And a red card gets pulled. And look, Victory fans have every right to feel like they're being targeted by the media, by everybody else. But when you go for something like that, it doesn't come off. And then you react in the way you do, like, I can't believe what happened. Well, the act in itself was with intent. It was just so much going forward for that ball. The ball wasn't there to be tackled like that. And unfortunately, Fashini just let the occasion get to him a little bit. And I think an older head probably wouldn't have done something so brash.
I don't know. Kevin Muscat.
Yeah, but not everyone's Kevin Muscat at 36.
He was sitting on the sidelines getting extraordinarily frustrated. There were calls that he got. That he should have been given a Hannibal Lecter-style mask to try control him on those sidelines.
Yeah.
But it was a matter of everyone was getting so frustrated that they actually forgot to look at the positives, such as Melbourne Victory's reserve goalkeeper, Lawrence Thomas, who was absolutely outstanding when he stepped up for the plate.
He was. He's a young guy. He had a lot behind him. You know, let's not forget he's the third choice keeper. Tando Valappi is in front of him. But on the big occasion, you know, it got to be the biggest stage he's ever played on against the champions, the best side that Australia's ever produced in a domestic sense. He played quite well. There were some moments where you just thought he should get down a bit earlier. Broish's free kick, okay. So you set the wall up, you stand on the other side, you expect the wall to do their job, and what a brilliant, brilliant piece of tactical nous from Rado Vidicic. You saw Broish knock it low. Unfortunately, Thomas had no chance, and he ran straight over to Rado Vidicic, and they celebrated that moment because they'd clearly watched videos, they'd planned it, and it executed it, and it shows a good side when the assistant coach is kicking goals like that.
Definitely, and we also have to remember Brisbane Roar, they might be treating this as a loss against Melbourne Victory, but they are 33 games unbeaten now.
Unbelievable, and I don't think many sides, I'm going to put the mockers on them, but I think they're going to probably get close to 40.
I agree with you, because I think apart from, they've already ridden the three big challenges. Melbourne Victory, Adelaide United, and Central Coast. They've ridden, and probably even Sydney.
Yeah,
they've ridden the biggest challenges, I believe, and they've gone past them.
Mm.
I was going to say Perth Glory is a challenge, but after yesterday's performance. But in that regard, you know, Ange Postecoglou was quite disappointed with the result, and look, that's just a massive indication of what their aspirations are now that they're in this run. They expect to win every game.
Mm.
They expect to dominate.
Mm.
And that's just a good thing for Australian football, full stop.
Absolutely. And, you know, they did really, really well, I think, against Sydney to withhold from the barrage that they were facing. Sydney have a bit more spine about them this season than they did last season. They've come from behind to draw games, to win games in Adelaide. And against Gold Coast today, they're going to have to be very, very careful. Very, very careful of one young Indigenous player, James Brown. What a talent. What a talent.
I honestly, in conversation, I actually say they are the Gold Coast United James Brown experience. It's a bit long to put on a jersey, but it's a good name, I think.
Yeah.
James Brown is really running the show. And we also have another centre forward, Maceo Richters.
Mm.
Those two together will terrorise Sydney's defence.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Pascal Boschart and Michael Beauchamp, those two together have been combining so well in defence, they're going to be tough to beat.
Totally. And look, it's going to be a great game because you've got all the youthful exuberance of Gold Coast United, and that's really been the story behind their performances this year. They don't blink at anybody. They just kind of go, yep, we're kids, we're playing in the A-League, we're good enough to be here, we don't care. against sides that are a bit older, like Sydney, I think you're going to see guys like Brett Emerton really run the show. He's been everywhere and he's played football. Him, Nicky Carr are going to be hard to get the ball off today. And then you've got guys like Beauchamp and Boskart who just are old heads who will be solid. They're going to have to watch the Tyros running around them. But I think today Sydney look good for 3 points.
You've got to love Miron Bleiberg. He's a bit like the mad scientist, you know. He makes up these concoctions with his side and you think it's either going to go really well or it's just going to blow up. And so far it's going really well. And I think congratulations to him because he's really backed in those kids of Gold Coast and they're performing for him.
Well, spot on. And I can't wait. I can't wait for this game. We're all going. If you've somehow listening to this before the game, which is completely impossible, we hope that you went as well. It's going to be a cracking game. And, guys, what are your predictions?
I'm saying Sydney FC win. I am a Sydney member, so I kind of have to put my backing behind them. And I'm going to say it's going to be a close game, but probably a 1-0 win for Sydney FC at the end there.
I think it's going to be a close game, but I think Sydney have shown enough over the last couple of weeks to show that they're on the upward trend. And therefore, I think they should win this game.
Yeah, I think it'll be reasonably uncomfortable 2-0 win, but there'll be periods where the Gold Coast will have the ascendancy.
And we also have another person in the studio, also known as Silent Ed, so we want to get his prediction.
Hey, Silent Ed.
And the crickets say 2-0 Sydney.
Yeah.
It's good to know.
I speak right. Cricket too. Someone who was speaking completely out of turn on the Twitter, we have to cross it, was Anthony Golic. It was just a really low, low-end utterance.
Well, his tweet, it is, Ben Williams, worst referee ever.
And if it ended there, it would have been a lot better than, you know, we would have expected some sort of outpouring of emotion. But then the next tweet, I don't know if we need to read it, but it was just...
I'm not going
to
read it out. How about I'll just say, Ben Williams, you are beep. Biggest beep going around, you beep.
Yeah, and the beeps kind of have a homophobic undertone, which we really don't want to see anything
else. It's not good to see in football.
It's
and
rubbish.
Not right to be advertising on Twitter there.
It's complete rubbish, and he probably shouldn't play next week. We've got to be serious about it. It'll be very interesting to see what the sanction will be. By the time you're listening to this podcast, there'll probably be some sort of wash-up from it. Hopefully he has to face the press and read out a statement because it's really pathetic, pathetic Twitter performance. Young kid with, you know, a forum with no medium in between. We saw it with Quade Cooper's bird saying similar sorts of things.
Stephanie
Rice. Sorry. She lost a lot for saying that. I really hope we see the same thing. There's no room for homophobia in our game.
Well, it's really interesting because I've just gone onto Twitter and his account's already been pulled.
For the latest news, opinion, match reports and for more on the A-League, head to our website at thefootballsack.com.
And there were a few games in the W League last night.
Yeah, there were a couple, and there were a couple of absolute crackers. Going through the results, there were a couple of results that have really affected the table and also a couple of testers for one or two contenders to the title. The three games that were on yesterday were the Perth Glory defeated Adelaide United 2-1 and some good first half goals in there, including a beautiful bicycle kick by Rachel Quigley. So if you can, jump onto your AVC and check that one out. The game that Pete and I got to was Sydney FC up against Canberra United, and it was Canberra's first ever win over Sydney with an Ashley Sykes winner early on in the match. But Canberra really soaked up heaps of pressure in that one, Pete.
Yeah, definitely. And it was just proof of how structured and organised Canberra United are in comparison to Sydney FC without Megan Rapponi. It was their first game without the American centre forward, and it kind of showed.
Yeah, it did. And Sydney were playing a bit like they still had the likes of Kai Simon and Lena Karmas up front. Unfortunately, they don't, and they're not going to be probably another 2 weeks. So it's going to be very interesting because that was Canberra's first real test, and they did pass it with flying colours. The other team that had a test, and they're a team that have amassed a pretty good squad so far, and they had the big test against Brisbane in Brisbane, and that was the Newcastle Jets, and they won that 1-3-2.
Well, that was with Casey Dumont getting sent off for a challenge on Lisa Devana, so your goalkeeper getting sent off in that game as well.
Yeah, devastated Casey Dumont, by the way, but it appears to have been the right call, and unfortunately for her, that means she will miss a game, but for Lisa Devana, that's now 4 goals in 2 games, and she's on fire.
She's proving to be unstoppable.
Okay, we're going to look at some National Youth League results that happened yesterday.
Well, we had Newcastle Jets having a 1-1 with Perth Glory. AIS got over the top of Gold Coast United 2-0. Melbourne Heart managed to defeat Adelaide away from home 1-0. And the game that I was at was Sydney FC versus Central Coast Mariners, with one goal being the difference there, and that goal for Central Coast Mariners getting them the result. And looking at how the table's going for the National Youth League, Perth Glory is sitting on top and looking comfortable.
We're going to do a bit of a segment now on Holger Ozic's very quiet, laid-back revolution, very much in the Australian mould, where he's completely changed the list before our very eyes and with the minimum of fuss. We've seen in previous years, especially at the World Cup, we saw some of the egos overflow, and fair enough, it was down a lot to the way they were being led by Pim Verbeek, but the word was, and the word is in camp, that there is a big four in the dressing room, and it's not so much the Schwarzer that's part of it, but a lot of it is through Lucas Neal, Harry Kewell, and Tim Cahill.
It's the big-name players, and sometimes that can cause you disruptions, but the fact is, the young guys are stepping up, and these people who we might not have really heard of before, like Nathan Coe, no one really knew much about him, and yet now he's sitting on the bench for the Socceroos as a reserve goalkeeper.
Well, let's look at the 2006 Socceroos, the fancied names that we had.
And our golden generation.
Exactly, it was. I mean, 74 was pretty special too, but for the players of this time, there's no one bigger in Australian football than guys like Bresch, Vinnie Grella, Jason Colina,
Timmy Cahill, Harry Kewell, Brett Emerton, centre midfields, those guys are. You've got Lucas Neal at the back line there as well. Craig Moore, who was a big name as well.
Yeah. And look, the revolution's been led a lot by the fact that guys like Bresch and Grella are just sort of taking a backward step from the international game, really trying to focus on the final throws of their careers in big leagues and trying to get some consistency there. So
you get some money as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They've earned it. But you get guys like Jason Colina, who's come home and he's going through hell at the moment. And, you know, we feel for him, but he's not going to feature for the Socceroos in the next year or so. So he's been assisted in that way. Guys like Cahill, been, you know, he was benched against Saudi Arabia, big call by Holger, but it paid off.
It was a big call, but it was also the kind of call that a coach, a manager who knew his side, knew his personnel, and who knew that just didn't work. Josh and Tim against Thailand, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
So he knew what he could do with his squad, and as you said, it turned out to be the absolutely correct call. Mm. I think it's also helped by the quiet revolution, as we're calling it. It's actually helped by the fact that the A-League, probably the last 2 years, the standard has jumped significantly. And Holger has been very vocal in saying that he believes in the A-League. He believes in the quality of product and the quality of player that's coming through that system. Mm. So that's aided it as well. And now this week you see the call-up of Mitch Nichols. And one person who I thought was quite unfortunate, and we've just spoken about him, is Eric Partolo. I don't think it will be much longer before he's in there. And I think it's also helped, thirdly, by the A-League producing qualities of players who are now being shipped overseas as really good product. We saw Robbie Cruz the other day get on. He had an assist. Matthew Lecky at Mönchengladbach has been doing really well. You've got
Matt McKay
at Rangers, who had a start on Saturday. You also turn around and you've got Nikita Rukavica. So in essence, our great products are being shipped overseas. And then the next tier down from the A-League, you've got a very good NTC program, which is the National Training Center, AIS. And those players are also going overseas. You've got Ryan Edwards, who's at Reading at the moment. Chris Hurd, who's playing a very good defensive midfield role. Dylan Tombides, who's coming back from cancer surgery. And then you've got, of course, Reece Williams down there at Middlesbrough. They're all products of the Australian youth system. So we've got our structures in place, and we're now finally starting to see the fruits come through. And of course, I'm forgetting of Adam Sirota and Tommy Orr as well.
Yeah,
so
Tommy Orr.
That's why it's able to happen, because we've got quality.
Yeah, we do, and we keep winning. We beat Germany in Germany. I mean, that's a phenomenal thing, and for Holger, that basically gave him free rein, and he was able to make big decisions after that. The players respect the way he plays. He plays adventurous football, and it's very much in the Australian psyche. And I think that if Pim Verbeek came through with this sort of change methodology, I mean, it's unlikely to see it from somebody like him, who's so so
regimental.
So regimental because he's so insecure and was so, he just didn't want to go forward in any sense because he was afraid of being exposed tactically, which he was ruthlessly at the World Cup. And I think that, you know, Holger believes in his abilities. He believes in the value of winning. He learned how to win winning a World Cup. And his essence is, you know, if a team, from the very first minute, teams have to prove that they can beat you. Until that point, you haven't been beaten at all, and it's really for the other team to come and play against you. Whereas Pim was more about, okay, we soak up some pressure, then we go forward on the counter. Very, very different styles and not the Australian psyche.
Well, it's interesting when you look at the preconditions that were required for the Australian coach. And there were a couple of them. And at the time that Holger Osiek was announced, there was disquiet. Let's be real. There was quite disquiet because big names were thrown around, like Paul Le Guin, who we've seen, thank goodness we didn't go down that path. big names were thrown about, but the preconditions were that they'd been in a national setup, that they'd had youth development experience, and also that they'd coached previous national teams outside of their own country.
And in Asia.
In Asia as well. Those were the preconditions for that. Now, Osiek wasn't at the top of the list, but you look at it, and for me, the key one was that they'd coached youth and succeeded well at it because we were aware that we would have to bring on the next generation because our older players were getting older.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at Osiek in that regard, his youth experience. This is a guy that is responsible at the moment for Mesut Ozil, Sami Khedira, Thomas Müller. They all came through his system when he was in charge of the German national team.
Amazing.
Amazing. Mm. And you can see what he's doing now with our youngsters. I mean, look at Robbie Cruz. How many people lamented Robbie Cruz when he was in Australia?
Mm.
And now he's getting into the national team set up and they're all improving, which is the key thing, because for so long we had the next wonder kid, but they were stagnant after a period of time.
Yeah.
But there is improvement now.
And we were hoping that wonder kid could be, you know, it and everything for the Socceroos. And now there's so many different options. And it's amazing. You go to a Socceroo game and the speed that the ball's been moving around and the players around the ball, you just never saw that under, you know, great players back in the day, like the Ocons and the Viduka's and things, but it was a lot more one-dimensional and you relied upon the fact that Kuhl and Viduka could just have that special moment where they linked up. But really, Holger has just, it's been a breath of fresh air. And something that when I was leaving the World Cup in South Africa after we beat Serbia in the final game of the group stage and thinking to myself, you know, there's some good signs there. There's some good signs that some young players are coming through and we can, you know, pin our hopes a lot on Luke Wilkshire, et cetera, et cetera. But to see then the next year and 2 years after that, you'd never have expected it. And it's such a credit to the man to heal the team spirit and really just flourish. It's really flourishing.
And that's what these players are experiencing at these Socceroos training camps. We looked at one that happened just the other day whereby we had guys like Mitch Nichols coming in and James Brown and a whole bunch of other youngsters, and they're trying to experience what the Socceroos training camp could be like, and they just got a little bit of a teaser, and it's really good to see that we're getting these little teasers, that these players are getting a taste for what could happen, and they get a future insight there.
And he's learning the players. He's getting to know them.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. Magic. That's like, okay, Thomas Amani does the exact same thing. He goes to W League games constantly. Mm. I see Spencer Pryor as well at games all the time.
Because you
and they're getting
to
know these girls perfectly.
Yeah.
And that's what Holger Olczyk's doing, the exact same thing, getting to every game.
Great segue, and I'm going to continue the Holger love, because when I was across in Germany, I mean, I saw the Australian men's national team coach going to women's training.
Mm.
There is no way on God's green earth you would have seen Pim Vivaik down at Matilda's training.
No.
And that for me was he understood our Australian football. He wanted to get involved and he wanted to be able to influence it at all levels and at all divisions of Australian football.
Yep.
And for me, I think that's been one of the key things is we feel, I guess in a way we feel validated, which is quite important because for many years, well, we still are a world football minnow. So when you get somebody who's been from a country who's done it all many, many, many times, there is a validation of what we're doing in our football culture.
Spot on, and it's grown so much. And look, I hope that, that roots are being sunk for Holger in Australia. I hope that he, you know, he loves his first summer, because it's a big thing in Australia. It's the lifestyle, and he can go from A-League game to A-League game, experience the essence of football in this country, and know that there's so much opportunity. And long live his reign, because quite honestly, I don't think we can say enough about him. If he's done this in his first year, imagine 5 years, you know, with the youngsters coming through and going to a World Cup in Brazil. I'm all for it. And that's all we've got time for on this Sack on Sunday. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Thank you very much, Pete Novikovsky.
Thank you very much for having me on.
And Anna Odong, always a pleasure.
Anytime.
Thank you very much.
That was the Football Sack Podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe on iTunes to stay up to date with all of the football action across Australia. Oh,